someone within Eskom who knew exactly where the CCTV cameras at the Tutuka power station near Standerton were cut a warming valve cable with a grinder during the past weekend, further adding to the power generating woes of the national power supplier. Spokesperson for Eskom confirmed that the incident, which happened between Friday and Tuesday, was only discovered at Unit 5 at the coal-fired Tutuka when they were in the process of being returned to service and they saw that it wouldn't start warming up. The question is, to what extent is sabotage a reality at Eskom? Joining us on the line, we have Chris Yelland, an energy expert. Chris, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning to you, Solomon, and to the listeners.
Sabotage obviously is of concern, but it could also be used as an excuse by Eskom to generate some sympathy when people are frustrated due to the load shedding. What do the facts tell us? To what extent is sabotage a challenge at Eskom?
You're quite right. One has to be very careful about claiming sabotage. I do remember a case some years ago with one of our ministers at the time claimed that the bolt in the stator problem at Coburg, which resulted in the outage of Coburg and damage to the rotor, was caused by sabotage. It turned out that it was actually a problem with the contractor, who happened to be an Eskom company, Rotec. And so it was, in that case, used as an excuse, and perhaps the minister jumped to a quick conclusion. But one has to be very careful about these things. But I must say, there does appear to be growing hard evidence now that the problems that Eskom are facing, at least some of them, are indeed caused by malicious sabotage. That is the deliberate damaging of equipment with a view to disrupting production. And it's certainly, there have been now a number of cases where Eskom has got pretty hard evidence. Of course, that evidence needs to be tested in court, and it doesn't seem that any of this has got to court yet. But it might still happen.
Yeah, so the one was what I spoke about in my introduction at Tutuka. The other one was reports suggesting that a plan of sabotage to shut down some of the units at the Letabo power station in the Free State was discovered just in time. And had it not been discovered, we would have been plunged into stage six of load shedding or worse. The CEO, Derrida, also seems to be making reference to acts of sabotage. How many incidents now are there? Were they hard facts, as you put it?
Yeah, look, the other one you mentioned at Letabo was related to the deliberate collapsing of some power lines leading to Letabo, which were supplying electricity for some of the auxiliary services at the power station. And they found evidence that the stay wires, these are the wires that keep the poles upright, had been deliberately cut with a cutting tool, and there was evidence, clear evidence of that. And also cut in such a way that the one line collapsed onto the other line, and that was, it seemed to be clearly the intention of the initial cutting of the stay wires. So that's the other one I've heard about. Look, there have been many other reported incidents, the details of which are a little bit vague. And those ones one needs to treat with a degree of suspicion when there is this vagueness. But when Eskom finds hard evidence, it generally says so, and then it hands the matter over to the police for further investigation, and hopefully the prosecuting authorities will lead to a conviction. So I think we just got to distinguish between those fairly vague allegations where there's no hard evidence actually presented and those where there is hard evidence presented.
Now, to what end, many may wonder, is this ANC factional politics? Is this internal politics of Eskom, perhaps certain individuals or groupings wanting to make the current management or the current board or the current CEO look bad?
Yeah, I think it sort of leads one to think or suspect that there are criminal activities taking place resulting in significant revenue streams for particular people, both within Eskom and outside of Eskom, and sometimes between collusion between Eskom people and outside people. And these revenue streams are being threatened by a new management at Eskom that is taking steps and significant efforts to expose these and to shut them down and to bring them to justice, certainly by reporting them and getting the justice authorities, the police authorities, to do their work. So the new management is a threat to those that are involved in these criminal activities and to the revenue streams that they enjoy, the criminal revenue streams. So, it's in their interests to try and present the Eskom current management as nefarious, they present them as being racist, that they are shutting down, particular people, and that this is done with prejudice, with racial prejudice. There have been that aspect to it. They're also, just to generally paint the existing Eskom management as so incompetent that it needs to be replaced. And we've seen these calls for the replacement of De Ruyter and Oberholzer, some of it tinged with racial prejudice, from all quarters in South African society, including, for example, NUMSA recently, came out with statements, alleging, incompetence and, poor performance by the executives, that they should be replaced. I think those are really disingenuous calls. It is absolutely clear in my mind and from the activities of the current management that they are trying to shut down these criminal activities. And what we're seeing is resistance from these criminal activities to try and protect their commercial interests and to protect themselves from going to jail.
Yeah, so on that note, I mean, we were also having the discussion earlier this week on the program. I think it was Mandy Wiener who wrote a piece for News 24 who said that you can't blame the current driver of the car, blame the people who messed up the car in the first place. Is that what applies to the Ruyter, the current management, the current board? Then there are others who say, well, yes. If you look at their tenure in office, there were certain things which they ought to have got right by now, which they didn't. So we can't just give them a free pass by saying, well, it's all the fault of state capture and the Zuma years and all of that, and the current management and board have to take very little to no responsibility.
Yeah, look, certainly there is no free pass. People, are employed. Executives are employed. They have, a task to do. They have a set of goals to achieve, and they enter into a contract with the employer, in this case government, to perform these tasks, and they've got to do them, and they've got to be held accountable. That's obvious. But you can't hold somebody accountable for problems that started 10, 15 years ago. Let's just take the design problems at Medupi and Kusile. Certainly, the existing management need to fix those design problems. That was part of their contract. But those design problems, started 15 years ago, in 2008, when the contracts were placed and when the designs were done. And it's quite clear that the current management is trying to rectify these design problems. So I think it's not difficult to distinguish, what the current management is responsible for and what is the responsibility of past management. De Ruyter and his team have only been there for 2.5 years, which is really a small part of how far back these problems go. So I think it's absolutely straightforward as to who's accountable for what, and certainly the problems that we currently see at Eskom, the financial problems, the environmental problems have been there long in the making. The operational problems with load shedding and delays at Medupi and Kusile, and lack of maintenance over extended periods are obviously not part of the current management's tenure or responsibility. I don't think this is a difficult matter at all to deal with.
All right, Chris, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. All the best.